Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Tuesday, June 16th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as outfielder Angel Martinez was placed on the 10-day IL with a fractured foot. Martinez is expected to miss anywhere between 1 to 2 months, 4 to 8 weeks for Martinez. He's been a very integral part of the Guardians outfield. So with Martinez out, Daniel Schneemann will be on the strong side of a center field platoon with outfielder Stuart Fairchild. Outfielder Petey Halpin was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Next, reliever Brad Keller was placed on the 15-day IL with forearm tendonitis. He's been the top setup option in the Phillies bullpen, but with him out, reliever Orion Kirkgreen will be the top right-handed setup option for the Phillies behind closer Yoan Duran. Reliever Max Lazar was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, closing pitcher Daniel Palencia was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. With Palencia out, that means the closer role is open in on the north side of Chicago, so we could see a mix of Jacob Webb, Caleb Thielbar, and Phil Maton mixing in for saves. They should be the top options. My favorite is Jacob Webb. He has the superior stats this year, and he's pitched much better since the beginning of May, so I think Webb is the top option for saves in the Cubs bullpen with Daniel Palencia hitting the IL with elbow inflammation. Reliever Gavin Hollowell was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, outfielder Randy Arozarena was placed on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. Arozarena was trending towards avoiding an IL stint, so I'd expect him to not miss more than the minimum time. With Arozarena out, Victor Robles will take over in left field for the Mariners. And in a corresponding move, outfielder Curtis Washington Jr. had his contract selected from the minors. He's a 26-year-old rookie who's played at high A in each of the last three seasons. He had a brief taste of AAA a couple years ago, but this is not a guy who's got a lot of experience in the high levels of the minors. Washington in 2026 at high A has batted just 190 with 7 homers, 14 steals, and 71 WRC plus. So it's great that he's getting an opportunity, but it looks like Connor Joe is expected to be recalled from the minors today, and I'd expect him to replace Washington. This must have been like an immediate availability issue. Like Arozarena was placed on the IL pretty late, and maybe Washington was the only guy they could get to the ballpark immediately. Maybe Connor Joe was around there. So with Washington up for a day, he might be right back down to the minors, where as Connor Joe will replace him in the majors. In terms of transactions, we'll get right back to talking about the Mariners. Catcher Cal Raleigh was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a month with an oblique strain. He'll return to being the Mariners' everyday catcher. In a corresponding move, catcher Johnny Pareda was optioned to the minors, which means Mitch Garver will be the backup catcher to Cal Raleigh. And shortstop J.P. Crawford was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a week with a bruised hand. Crawford returned and played third base instead of his usual shortstop, as top prospect Colt Emerson will stick in the six hole. J.P. Crawford is definitely not a great defender at shortstop anymore. Emerson is certainly superior, so the move makes sense. But Crawford has hit really well this year. He'll remain at the top of the order for the Mariners and play third base every day, sending Miles Mastrobuoni to the bench. Next, we have starting pitcher Kodai Senga, who's missed a month and a half with lumbar spine inflammation and ulnar nerve irritation. He was activated from the 15-day IL today to start in Cincinnati, and Senga tossed 4 innings, allowing 2 hits with 4 earned runs, 4 walks, and 5 strikeouts. He induced 12 whiffs with 26% CSW across 82 pitches. The increased velocity that we saw early in the season is still around, as Senga sitting 96, but he couldn't find the zone enough. The overall intent was there, with four seamers upstairs, cutters, glove side, and ghost forks down low, but that trio combined for just 51% strikes, and that's not going to work. The path to success for Senga is apparent, but he's definitely got some work to do. Let's hope he takes a step forward versus the Cubs' next. Reliever Jonathan Pintaro was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, shortstop Cooper Pratt was recalled from the minors. He's the Brewers' number 4 prospect and the number 63 prospect in baseball. He signed an extension with the Brewers earlier this year. He's not somebody who I think is going to be super fantasy relevant. Definitely worth it in 15-team leagues and deeper because he's going to play shortstop every day, but he's more of a plate discipline and great fielder type of guy. He's batted .241 with 6 homers and 17 steals at AAA, so maybe he can have at least some good speed numbers. I just don't expect the batting average and power to be there. He's great plate discipline though, so he might be an option in deep points leagues. 13% walk rate, 14% strikeout rate at AAA this year. But with Pratt taking over at shortstop, Joey Ortiz will shift to the short side of a third base platoon with David Hamilton, as Luis Rengifo was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, we have second baseman Tommy Edman, who was activated from the 60-day IL after missing all season following ankle surgery. Edman should be the everyday second baseman for the Dodgers, but he was on the bench in his return from the IL. I don't know if that was an easing him back into the lineup thing, or maybe they see him as more of a utility player, seeing time in the infield and outfield. Either way, Tommy Edman will find his way into the lineup more often than not, is what I'd expect. Santiago Espinal was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Mitch Spence was optioned to the minors after allowing 6 runs and a spot start for the Royals on Monday. Next, starting pitcher Hunter Brown was activated from the 60-day IL after missing more than 2 months with a shoulder strain. Brown started versus the Tigers in his return, tossing 5 2/3 innings, allowing 3 hits, 1 earned run with 3 walks and 7 Ks. He induced 12 whiffs with 32% CSW across 92 pitches, and he looked like classic Hunter Brown with elite heaters and a devastating curve. He should quickly establish himself as a top 15 starter and is an easy start in Toronto next after success in a high pitch count on Tuesday. Reliever Jaden Murray was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And in other Astros news, catcher Yainer Diaz was activated from the 10-day IL after missing more than a month with an oblique strain. Diaz will return to being the everyday catcher for the Astros, as Christian Vasquez will be his backup catcher, and catcher Colin Price was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, closing pitcher Ryan Helsley was activated from the 15-day IL after missing more than a month with elbow inflammation. Helsley will reclaim the closer job in Baltimore, putting Rico Garcia in a high leverage setup role and pretty much removing his fantasy relevancy in safe only leagues. Reliever Anthony Nunez was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, starting pitcher Seth Lugo is expected to be activated from the 7-day IL on Friday to start versus the Cardinals. He's been out with a concussion, but that was after being hit by a comebacker. But Lugo will hopefully get right back to being the solid Toby that he's been throughout the season and replacing Mitch Spence in the Royals rotation. Next, starting pitcher Justin Verlander is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL on Sunday to start versus the White Sox. He missed all year with hip inflammation, but he's making his return to his first ball club, the Tigers, and Verlander's return will move Cater Montero to the Tigers bullpen. Outfielder Trent Grisham is expected to miss a few weeks with the hamstring strain that landed him on the IL a few days ago. So Grisham out for around a month, pretty rough for the Yankees. And lastly, the Mariners are going to go back to the piggyback plan that they had before, but instead of just Bryce Miller and Luis Castillo involved in the piggyback, we'll see every starter rotate through and have piggyback days. It's not ideal. I don't know why they won't just go with a 6-man rotation, but this is certainly going to at least slightly impact the fantasy viability of all these starters. I think all of them are worth paying attention to in fantasy leagues, but if we're cutting into their innings or forcing them to pitch in relief, it's not going to be ideal for any of the pitchers in the Mariners rotation. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had just 14 games as the game between the Giants and Braves was suspended due to inclement weather. We'll start off with our hitters, leading off with first baseman Kyle Schwarber as he helped the Phillies to win in Miami. And yes, I said first base. He started at first base on Tuesday. A little bit of a surprise for the usual DH. Schwarber went 1-for-2 with 2 runs, a home run, an RBI, and 2 walks. It was his 25th home run of the year, and it traveled 352 feet at 97 miles per hour. Schwarber is the MLB home run leader, and he also leads the National League with a .574 slugging percentage. Next, we have outfielder Brian Reynolds, who helped the Pirates to win in Sacramento, going 4-for-5 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 10 homers now. First one went 408 feet at 104 miles per hour, and the second one 350 feet at 97 miles per hour. Reynolds has had a big bounce back campaign after his worst full season last year, in which he batted just 245 with 16 homers and a 99 WRC plus. This year, Reynolds is batting 280 with 10 homers and a WRC plus around 140, rivaling his best offensive season back in 2021. The biggest change has been Reynolds' patience at the plate, as he's walking 15% of the time, which is 6% more than he had throughout his career entering this season. Reynolds is swinging less than ever. He's chasing less than ever, and he's making the most zone contact he ever has in his career. There's another level power-wise for Reynolds to reach if he can cut back on his 50% ground ball rate, allowing him to tap into his improved 73-mile-per-hour average bat speed, but will certainly take this level of production that we've received thus far from Brian Reynolds. And lastly, third baseman Zach Geloff on the other side of that game did all he could, but the A's lost to the Pirates. He went 3-for-3 with 2 runs, a home run, 2 runs batted in, a walk, and a steal to complete the combo meal. It was Geloff's 10th homer and his 8th steal, and the homer went 360 feet at 98 miles per hour. Geloff was incredible as a rookie in 2023, but he's since struggled with injuries and strikeout issues. He's figured out how to stay healthy this year and has taken steps to improve his contact. As a result, he's having his best season since that rookie campaign, batting 286 with great power speed numbers and an 835 OPS. Geloff's batted ball metrics aren't spectacular. They haven't changed at all, but there is room for improvement, as his career high near 74 mile per hour average bat speed suggests a superior power ceiling than his expected metrics have pointed to. Obviously, the biggest change for Geloff has been reducing his strikeout rate to 25%, which is an 8% decrease from the career rate with which he entered the season. It's thanks to a more passive approach at the plate, as Geloff swinging less, chasing less, and making a lot more contact on pitches both in and out of the zone, suggesting his current plate approach is sustainable. The A's are believing in the Geloff breakout, making sure he gets in the lineup any way possible, whether that be at second base, third base, or in the outfield, which has the added aspect of giving Geloff multi-position eligibility. Geloff is worth your attention in fantasy leagues. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Logan Gilbert, who helped the Mariners to win against the Orioles, tossing 7 innings, allowing 2 hits and 1 run, walking 1 while striking out 10. He induced 19 whiffs with 33% CSW across 94 pitches, and Gilbert earned the gallows pull by leading baseball with those 19 whiffs. He flooded the zone with heaters, inducing 12 whiffs with his heater alone, and he's been on a heater with a 1.50 ERA and a 30% strikeout rate across his last 5 starts. Gilbert is returning to being an ace. Next, we have Jesus Luzardo, who helped the Phillies to win against the Marlins, tossing 7 innings, allowing 5 hits and 2 runs, walking 2 while fanning 9. He induced 13 whiffs with 38% CSW across 106 pitches, and he earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 38% CSW. This was driven by a passive Marlins lineup that allowed Luzardo to steal 13 called strikes with his sinker while chasing sweepers for 8 whiffs. The full season numbers aren't great for Luzardo, 4.20 ERA, 1.31 whip, but he's worth starting every week, as the blowups that he's had throughout the season weigh down his full season numbers. And next we have Justin Wroblewski, who helped the Dodgers to win against the Rays, tossing 6 shutout innings, allowing just 3 hits, walking nobody while striking out 5. He induced 9 whiffs with 30% CSW across 67 pitches. Pretty incredible that Wroblewski survived 6 frames with just 67 pitches. And after an unbelievable and unsustainable start to the season, Wroblewski continues to make the changes we wanted to see to help us buy into his breakout. For starters, after opening the season sitting 93 with his heater, he's got it up to 95 miles per hour here, closing in to the 96 he sat last year and where we want him to be to really believe in sustainable success. And just as importantly, Wroblewski's moved away from being a two-pitch pitcher, expanding his arsenal from four-seam fastball and slider to include sinkers, curveballs, and changeups. He was never going to succeed with just 2 pitches because despite his impressive control, those pitches aren't dominant enough. And if his command faltered, even just with one of them, it would spell disaster. Wroblewski got away with plenty of heaters in the zone yesterday, while sliders stayed low, sinkers assisted in the strike department, and curveballs stole strikes. There's a lot of work to be done on Wroblewski's changeup, but as long as Wroblewski keeps increasing his fastball velo and expanding his arsenal, I'll believe in him more and more, and I'm totally fine starting him in Minnesota next. Lastly, we have Reed Detmers, who helped the Angels to win in Arizona, tossing 7 scoreless innings, allowing just 3 hits, walking nobody while fanning 3. He induced 4 whiffs with 24% CSW across 90 pitches, and Detmers is 4th in baseball with 100 strikeouts. He's sixth with 88 innings pitched, and he's tied for seventh with his 1.00 whip. And despite how well Detmers has pitched and continues to pitch, it's so hard to believe. Yeah, his four-seamer and slider are dope, and he commands them pretty well, but the slider command has been fading in and out as his workload increases, and he hasn't deployed the tertiary offerings to support the 1-2 punch when one of them disappears. This start was concerning because his fastball and slider weren't fooling anyone, combining for just 19% CSW. Surprisingly, his curveball stepped up with a whopping 62% CSW, and that hook could be the pitch that saves him from completely falling apart when his slider field disappears. I think we thought it was going to be the changeup, but that changeup just has not been there for him this year. I'm not a huge believer in the curveball, but it has performed really well this year, so maybe that is going to be the savior pitch for him. However, there are other factors that have me worrying. On top of that, he was super lucky to go 18 for 21 on outs on balls in play, as Detmers was unable to avoid contact with just four whiffs on Tuesday. And we may want to blame his slider sitting a tick down at 85 miles per hour. We're going to want to see that get back up to 86, 87 to believe that he's going to be able to avoid bats moving forward. Of course, I'm going to keep starting Reed Detmers, but I see the warning signs and I'd be looking to sell high, especially as he heads to Sacramento next. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Gus Varland worked around a solo shot for his sixth save. Clayton Beter had pitched on back-to-back days, so that's why they went to Gus Varland. And his brother, Louis Varland, also got a save, a four-out save, his 13th of the year. I don't know how many times in baseball history we've seen brothers get saves on the same day. That's certainly a question for the effectively wild crew. Ryan Yarbrough had a three-inning save, his second of the year. Tony Santion recorded his fourth save with a scoreless ninth. Trevor McGill had a perfect ninth for his ninth save. Riley O'Brien recorded his 18th save with a hitless ninth. Jaden Hill had a perfect ninth for his first save. It's clearly a closer committee in Colorado. Josh Hader recorded his third save with a scoreless ninth. Andres Munoz also had a scoreless ninth for his 11th save. Gregory Soto also had his 11th save with a scoreless ninth. And lastly, Tanner Scott had a perfect ninth for his ninth save. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Elvis Alvarado of the A's served up a solo shot pitching the ninth in a tie game to take his first loss. And Kirby Yates pitched a hitless eighth up by seven. And I'm not sure if he's the clear-cut closer for the Angels. I like Sam Bachman the most in that bullpen, but the Angels have not given him a save opportunity. So I don't know. You probably want to avoid that bullpen anyway. The Angels aren't winning too many games, but there's also a lot of options and the saves are going to be spread thin if we have a closer committee. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Wednesday, June 17th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games, which is a little misleading. We'll have two teams off, but the Braves and Giants will be resuming their game from Tuesday, so they'll have a quasi-doubleheader. My matchup of the day is Shohei Ohtani versus Shane McClanahan. Ohtani has been incredible this year on the mound, and of course, he's a two-way player, so he hits some home runs as well. He hit one yesterday, so I think he's got to be the MVP again this year. I really think the voters are going to be foolish to not vote for him. And he'll be squaring off against McClanahan, who's had great moments this year. He's had great moments throughout his career. It's going to be a tough matchup versus the Dodgers, but this should be a fun pitching matchup, Ohtani versus McClanahan. In terms of probable starters, we've got six guys in the auto starts tier, including Ohtani and McClanahan. McClanahan's in the probably starts tier, excuse me, including Ohtani. We've also got Gavin Williams in Milwaukee, George Kirby versus the Orioles, and Carlos Rodon versus the White Sox. Our probably starts tier has three guys, and our questionable starts tier has six, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Javier Assad versus the Rockies. He's getting rocky road, so one of the best matchups you can get as a pitcher, and Javier Assad has pitched well in his first two outings in the Cubs rotation. I'm not a believer in him full season as he's a low-end Toby, but when he's commanding like he has been, he's somebody who can definitely go on a Vargas roll. He's really good at inducing weak contact and ground balls and avoiding hard contact. So I think Assad is a decent option versus the Rockies. I'd also keep an eye out for Peter Lambert versus the Tigers. Lambert is on the higher end of Toby's, where he has more strikeout potential than some of them, but he's been very reliable this year. If he's got good command of his secondaries, he could have a great outing. If not, he could have a pretty decent outing versus the Tigers. That's Peter Lambert. In terms of hitter suggestions, I target Mets and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark because it's one of the best hitters parks in baseball. We'll see Nolan McClain square off against Nick Lodolo in that one. I target Royals and Nationals hitters in Nationals Park, as we'll see Luinder Avila square off against Zach Littell. Avila has a 6.19 ERA and Littell has a 5.32 ERA, so definitely could see a high-scoring ball game between the Royals and Nationals. I'd also target Marlins hitters versus Andrew Painter in Citizens Bank Park. He's been terrible this year, 6.43 ERA for Andrew Painter. I'd also look at Cardinals hitters versus Griffin Canning in Busch Stadium. The Padres haven't announced their starter, but I'd expect it to be Canning. He might have an opener. Maybe that's why they haven't announced the starter, but Canning has been even worse than Painter with a 7.17 ERA on the season, so target Cardinals hitters there. And lastly, I'd look at Pirates and A's hitters in Sutter Health Park. It's one of the best hitters parks in baseball, as the A's play in a minor league stadium that's in the hot weathered Sacramento. We'll see Braxton Ashcraft square off against Aaron Civale in that one. And now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. We have just one. Tanner Scott has pitched on back-to-back days, but so have both Will Klein and Kyle Hurt. So expect Alex Vesia or Blake Treinen to be the top options for a save for the Dodgers on Wednesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.